Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the John Wood Community College and the Ohr Research and Demonstration Center in Western Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. It is the 17th day of July. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets, of course, with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. The folks up at Risk Pulse in Chicago will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way today, we'll preview the August 2nd 40th anniversary of this research site. So stay with us for this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look now at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. September corn, a penny and a quarter lower at $3.75. December, $3.88. 1.5 cents lower. The March at $3.98 3/4. Down a penny and a half. And May corn of next year, a penny and a quarter lower at $4.03 3/4. Next year's July down 1 cent at $4.08 3/4. August soybeans down 4 cents today, $9.85 the settlement price. September at $9.89 1/4, 3.5 lower. And the November beans, your new crop down 4 cents at $9.97 1/2. January down 4 at $10.06 1/4. And March futures at $10.09 3/4, down 4 1/4. Bean oil down 23 cents at $33.01, and the bean meal at $3.21.80, down $1.90 for the day. September wheat futures soft red at $5.06, down 4 3/4. December at $5.30 1/4, 4.5 lower. The hard red in September down 7 at $5.06 1/2, and December at $5.32 3/4, 7 1/4 lower. And the September spring wheat up 11 1/4, or rather 11 3/4 in Minneapolis at $7.69 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures in the August 85 cents lower at $116.95. October at $118.62 1/2, a nickel higher for the afternoon. August feeder cattle at $154.42 1/2, 15 cents higher. And lean hogs for the day, 20 cents lower at $92.40 in the July. The August at $80.77 1/2, 87 1/2 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to most of our programming in its entirety each and every business day of the year, including Commodity Week. We record that at about 3 o'clock on Thursdays.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Through both the prosperous and challenging economic cycles of agriculture, Farm Credit will support rural Illinois today and tomorrow.
Here's what some of the other markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil at $46.04 a barrel, about 50 cents higher. Ethanol futures at $1.53 1/10. That's 0.7 cents lower. And the heating oil per gallon or diesel fuel at $1.49 9/10, a penny and a half lower. Gasoline down 0.3 cents at $1.55 6/10 on the RBOB. That's the wholesale price. And natural gas up 3 7/10 at $3.07. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 10 points lower at 21,585. The U.S. dollar at 94.925 is down 0.005. And gold futures at $1,233.40 are currently $6.80 higher. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Clear skies, a low of 61. Winds out of the west and light and variable. Tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 89. Again, white and light and variable winds. Tomorrow night, mostly clear and a low of 66. Wednesday, partly cloudy skies will go to 92. Southwest winds at 5 to 10. Clear skies on Wednesday evening will drop to 71. Sunshine on Thursday and 96 degrees west. Southwest winds at 10 to 15. Thursday night, a few clouds from time to time. A stray shower or a thunderstorm is possible.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Just a reminder that I'll be out of the office the rest of the week. If something important happens, I'll update the website. Otherwise, follow me on Twitter there, and you can follow the crop tour map as well. Again, that's willag.org. We're now joined on this Monday, of course, by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, Kurt, thanks for being with us. Looks like the markets were finally quiet for the day.
Well, we had a lot of zigging and zagging, no really giddy up and go, here today. Thought there'd be some activity overnight, and in the wee hours of the morning, as traders kind of watched the weather maps, but traded both sides, ended corn in fractionally lower, beans down about 3, wheat down about 4 cents on the day. Overnight trade opened steady higher, then we went lower. Weather maps, Canadian a little wetter, Americans a little wetter. Europeans dry for the central pellet. It's got moisture confined mainly to the north. But producers in the central belt here, they kind of missed the weekend rain activity, are going to be faced with some mid-90-degree temperatures. Then when you move on out to that 8 to 14-day forecast, it continues to stay a little bit on the warmer, drier side. As we go through the weekend through here, as they update these weather maps, beans might be a little bit more the focus because it's August makes or breaks the bean crop, Todd.
What are the expectations for this afternoon's weekly crop progress numbers?
Well, it kind of changed as the day went on, but average corn conditions right around about 64%. The range is anywhere from 62 to 66. Last week we were at 65, so down 1% as a nation. Soybeans, 61%, good to excellent. Trade's got a guess of anywhere from 59 to 64%. Last week we were at 62, down 1%. Wheat, down 1%, spring wheat that is. And the wheat harvest upwards towards 78% complete on wheat harvest. The key will be kind of the state breakdowns as we kind of digest that news here at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
When you take a look at the forecast and you think about both corn and soybeans, is there any reason to protect new crop corn?
Well, price-wise, marketing-wise, it depends where you're at. We've been doing more of a – well, we've been doing a lot of different strategies. The most popular one that I've been promoting ever since Claire back last fall was the courage calls. Get those calls on, and as the market goes higher, you can have some courage to sell in case you're faced with concerns about what your production is. The other thing we've done quite a bit of is put price floors in place. As we got into, probably the second week of June, second week of June, guys came a little concerned about how many bushels they would have to market. So we went the floor route. That way it left your upside open price-wise and bushel-wise, sort of a little bit more of a conservative approach to have some protection in case this thing rolls over. This time of year, we get a little warm and dry, run the market up, and moisture would come in. We could drop fairly quickly. Commodity funds is the other fear why we've gone to a little bit of a covered position. Last week there, one day, they came in and sold over 30,000 contracts of beans and 30,000 contracts of corn and 17,000 contracts of wheat. I tried to stand in front, but it did no good, Todd, so you got to be careful.
What are you hearing from producers across the United States as far as conditions in their field? And I don't know whether you've had much contact with the folks in Indiana and Ohio. We haven't talked a lot about them other than early on where they were really wet and very concerned about their crops. They remained that way for a long time, and they're, I think, pretty variable still.
Yeah, it's about the story we told earlier here a couple weeks ago about the double barrel shotgun against the barn. It varies a lot. In the central part here, guys are really surprised how the crop looks as a whole. Nice color. Bean wise, maybe a little bit behind. The beans are starting to cover some rolls. The moisture has been hit and miss. In some areas, it's been way too much, 6 to 7 inch downpours, and those guys to be struggling, particularly if your ground does not handle that very well. Southwest of us, I visited with a few guys who received some moisture yesterday. There was a pretty good moisture producer in the southern half of Illinois, anywhere from a half to upwards towards one and a half inches of rain. That gave them quite a bit of relief. They were fairly comfortable receiving that, and they feel a little bit more aggressive about hedging and forward contracting a little bit of grain. But your question in the eastern, you get in Indiana, you move east, and Wayne Nelson's territory east, and it's a little bit of a different story there. They've just been bombarded left and right. This afternoon's crop conditions report's probably going to show they're still not a very high rating in the good to excellent category. So Indiana, Ohio continues to be a concern from too much moisture and just really struggling to get the crop off in a good growing condition atmosphere.
Yeah, I won't get a chance again to talk to anybody really until I get to Zwicker later in the week once I get to Fargo, North Dakota. Again, next week with you, just some things that are coming up. I'll be on the road this week. If people want to follow me on Twitter, they can, at Commodity Week, online, willag.org, and I'll try to take some pictures of the crop. I'm in Western Illinois today at the Ore Research Center, which is near Perry. And you've got some events that I'll be at, I think, on the 31st of July and the 1st of August. And I will probably not make the 2nd of August event because I'll be back here. But there are some times that producers can come see you and a few others, right?
Yeah, we're calling it the Giddy Up event. We're the Dan Zwicker and Bill Graff Grain Marketing Tour, actually. It kicks off 2 weeks from today, July 31st, over at in Vermilion County. It's going to be quite an event because us, Bates Commodities, Wade Nelson, L&M Commodities, and Merrill Crowley from Crowley Commodities are all going together and having Dan come in and give a pretty good outlook. Later on in the week, we'll have Dan and even Bill Graff come in and speak in Peoria and Springfield, Illinois. So, yeah, we've put together some pretty good things for Dan to present here that to last in July, 1st of August. And we're looking forward for anyone that can make it out to come by and see what Dan has to say.
Hey, thanks so much. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Well, just as a reminder, I'll be traveling all week long, and if you'd like to stay up with where I am, you can check out the webpage at willag.org, that's willag.org, or you can follow me on Twitter at Commodity Week, and you can see my crop tour from here to Fargo, North Dakota. I'm going to take off tomorrow morning, and we'll run from here to Burlington, Iowa, and from Burlington to Des Moines over to Omaha, and then straight up 29 or thereabouts to attend the Growers' Day at the Budweiser malting plant in Moorhead, which is Twin City to Fargo, Minnesota, that is. It should be a great day on Thursday. That will be only day that I should be live this week unless something really happens strange in the marketplace. So if there's a big move, I may try to get you something else on the air, except for Thursday, when we'll definitely have a show from the Growers' Day there in Fargo, North Dakota, and we'll talk to Dan Zwicker, and Commodity Week will be done on that day as well. Otherwise, if something really strange happens, it'll either show up on the air or more likely just up on the website, willag.org. And again, if you want to follow that crop tour, I'll be going through what the heart of the driest areas have been. You remember that area from Des Moines all the way, stretches all the way into actually Western Illinois, but we'll run from Burlington to Des Moines and then right up the state lines there. We'll see what the crop looks like this week. You can stay with us. Speaking of drought in the western part of Illinois, we're today in Griggsville in Western Illinois. In a couple of weeks, I'll be back for the 40th anniversary of the University of Illinois' Ore Center. that is coupled with the community college here, John Wood. John Wood's headquartered in Quincy, but they have an agricultural portion of their community college on the research facilities that are outside of Griggsville, actually Perry, Illinois. This is the Orr Research and Development Center. We're joined by Fred Bradshaw, actually Fred's son, who started this. We're joined by Matt Bradshaw now. Matt is the chairman of the Orr Corporation, and this is a unique experience. Looking forward to this 40th anniversary celebration. It's the second day of August. Folks who are listening that know about it can always contact you or some other folks in RSVP. Can you take me back just a bit? I've talked to your father about this, some of the local folks, as to the reasons why it's important to have a research facility here in Western Illinois and the unique relationship with John Wood.
The Orr Research Center, located in northern Pike County, Illinois, has been extremely beneficial for our area because the different soil types that research farm has, and it gives us a representation of different kinds of productivity that cannot be replicated in other parts of the state. And then in the mid-80s, we was able to incorporate also into the beef center on the south side of the farm, where they could incorporate some of the farming practices with the crop science along with the beef programs to get a better representation of what we have to offer in Western Illinois. That's just between the two rivers. That's just unlike the prairie areas throughout the state of Illinois.
Now, this started with the Two Rivers Resource Conservation Council. It was a committee in 1972 that thought about what Western Illinois needed and decided that the soils here, where we have some glacial impact and some not, were just enough different that there was a transition place that made it unique, that they wanted to have some research facilities here. It took them 5 years to put this all together, but it's been a really fantastic working relationship since then.
Absolutely. And when they cited that location, they had numerous different spots throughout Western Illinois, not just in Pike County, that they had identified as a possible candidate to be the location. However, in the end, they end up picking this piece of property along 104, pretty much between Perry, Illinois, and Liberty, Illinois, that had over 19 different soil types, and some of the research that I've seen in studies that those types of soil that represent almost 30% of the tire production in the state of Illinois.
And so worked really hard at bringing a research facility here, locally funded in part, public-private partnership, unique in the state, unique in the nation. People have come out and taken a look at it, tried to duplicate it other places. We're going to celebrate 40 years, and you're helping to chair that and put together. What kinds of things will we be doing on the second day of August?
Yeah, we're very excited about our event that we're putting on for the anniversary of Governor Jim Thompson's signing of the original appropriation that was introduced by Senator Vince DiMuzio at the time. And I believe the total amount was $313,000. And then there was close to $150,000 that our organization raised to fill in the gap to complete the funding for the purchase of the land and building the center. On the second, we plan on having a time to showcase what research and what progress that we've made, not with only the beef center and the crop science, but also with John Wood Community College, where in the early 80s, where they was able to come in and be a unique relationship with the land grant university to set up their agriculture education center.
Over that time, about 1,600 students have graduated through the John Wood Community College system. There have been 100 interns that have worked on the farms, and we're now joined by Travis Mateer. He's a beef specialist from the U of Y to talk a little bit about not the interns, but the beef operations on this site and what it really means in terms of impact across the state of Illinois and the nation. What does having another facility, a third facility in the state where we can raise beef cattle and where beef cattle really are raised in this part of Western Illinois, what impact does that have?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you just mentioned it, Western Illinois is cow country in Illinois. And so we're right in the backyard of a lot of the cattlemen, the progressive cattlemen that are trying to figure out how to better meet the goals of their production operations and try to figure out how to be sustainable. And the big part of sustainability is probably profitable, right? So we're answering those questions. We're right in the backyard, but we are a component of a bigger system. So the University of Illinois has those three farms, and the Ora Center is a huge contributor along with our campus farm in Dixon Springs, and given the university an ability to research topics that you can't do in 20 and 30 cow herds. Those producers, the average size of an Illinois cow herd is roughly 40 cows, and you can't do your own on-farm research projects. And so we have the capability to carry out those research projects with the numbers that we do have and get that information back to the producer and say, hey, this is something you guys can utilize on your farm to increase that sustainability and that profitability of your operation.
Surprisingly, this is looked at not only in the state of Illinois as something really important, but across the nation. And I've heard it referred to as a mecca.
Yeah, we probably brag on that just a little bit, but we are. I mean, for a university that's east of the Mississippi River to have the numbers that we do and the research capacity, not only on the cow-calf side, but the feedlot side as well, we're generating information that's used by breed associations and progressive breeders all across the United States, and you could argue internationally now. And so there's no doubt that our professors, Dr. Scheich, spends a lot of time talking to consultants of breed associations, and those folks have international relationships. And so the information that we garner from the Ore Beef Research Center has a huge local impact, but it goes so much further than that.
And one of the things that you've got in the works at this point, you mentioned breed associations, is research looking into the differences of breeds and how their cutability is utilized in the meatpacking industry.
No doubt, and I think that I like to talk about production items for those small cow-calf farmers that we do have here in Illinois, but to keep that system going, we have to realize that the end product is extremely important. And so we've got feed efficiency research, and that we collect carcass data on all those cattle when they're harvested, and we can take those impact points and make huge selection differences through those breed associations. So this loop occurs where they come to the university system and say, hey, can you guys investigate this for us? And we provide them with useful, unbiased data that they can churn out to their producer and breeder base and make that impact in those future genetic lines.
Travis, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to being back here on the second day of August to help celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Ore Center.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Travis Mateer. He joined me along with Matt Bradshaw, who is the chairman of the Ore Organization. Again, they'll be celebrating the 40th anniversary of the University of Illinois Ore Center. And to some extent, John Wood, which came a couple of years after the Ore Center was established, and the working relationship that the University of Illinois has had in the western part of the state and with the local community here.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services created specifically for the cooperative's member owners to meet the needs of rural America, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, point-of-sale financing, and risk management options, helping farm families succeed today and tomorrow.
It's National Peach Ice Cream Day. The origins of ice cream can be traced back to at least the 4th century BC. Roman Emperor Nero would often order ice brought back from the mountains and combined with fruit toppings. The first ice cream parlor in America opened in New York City in 1776. Originally, it was called Iced Cream, which later was abbreviated to the name we know today. On this day in agricultural history in 1839, Ephraim Shea was born. An American logger, Shea invented the Shea-geared small steam locomotive to haul heavy logging trains at low speeds over rough terrain with poorly laid uneven track, sharp curves, and grades of up to 14%. In 1790, Thomas Saint, a London cabinet maker, received a patent for possibly the first sewing machine, fitted with an awl that both punched and allowed a needle to pass through leather. Saint's conception used only a single thread and formed a chain stitch. Saint never followed up and made a working model of his patent design. In 1938, Douglas Wrongway Corrigan landed his plane in Dublin, Ireland, after a 28-hour flight in which he claimed he did not know he was traveling over the Atlantic. He was supposed to be heading to California from New York City. And in 1995, the NASDAQ stock index closed above the 1,000 mark for the first time in history. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Just a quick reminder, I am at the John Wood Community College and Ore Research Center in Western Illinois today. For the rest of the week, I'll be on the road, headed to Fargo, North Dakota on Thursday, taking the long way there through Iowa and up Route 29 just to get a good look at the crop, and then coming back through Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Madison by the time I get to Saturday. If you want to follow along, you can do that at the website, willag.org, willag.org, or on Twitter at Commodity Week. Mark Russo is now here. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for being with us. Looks like there's been a change in the weather patterns. Can you tell me about it?
Well, Todd, with the pattern across the Corn Belt, let alone the central U.S. over the next couple of weeks, what we're going to be seeing due to this oscillation of the ridge of high pressure between the western and the central U.S., that is going to open the door for better rainfall prospects. And these indications started to show up the middle part of last week, and they've been consistent in the model output that we've been analyzing. So with this pattern here upcoming, once the ridge is actually a bit more into the south central U.S., it kind of centered in the plains, that actually opens up the door for some of this monsoonal moisture coming in out of the desert southwest, which at this time of year, you begin to develop thunderstorm activity over the higher plateau. Some of this is moisture coming in off the Pacific, but that feed of moisture is going to be moving into the central U.S., and that's going to allow these thunderstorm complexes to begin firing up starting the middle part of this week, and that pattern looks to persist into next week as well. So as a result of this, we do see better rainfall prospects for the driest western part of the Midwest, and that also does include the far northwest Midwest, including the Northern Plains Spring Wheat Belt.
What happened to the ridge?
Well, the ridge is around, and it continues to be a stronger than normal feature, but the way that it's going to be oscillating over the next few weeks, it's going to be shifting between the Intermountain West, let's call it Utah, is where it's centered for a few days, but then shifting out into the Plains region over Kansas, even into Missouri. So it's still a feature. It is a stronger than normal feature, but it's not strong enough to prevent any kind of moisture feed directly into the Midwest. And on the northern periphery of the ridge, we're going to see these thunderstorm complexes fire up, which is actually the pattern that we saw last week across the Midwest, which featured widespread heavier rainfall, especially in areas of the central and eastern Midwest.
Are there any places that are likely to be dry under this situation?
Well, for the far northwest Midwest into areas of the Dakotas, at least relative to the remainder of the Corn Belt, that's the area that could, at least some pockets could miss out. But you're talking more so of the central areas of the states, not necessarily the Red River Valley there in the eastern part of the Dakotas, which is one of the largest producing areas specifically within that region. The other area would be more of the far southwest, kind of centered on Kansas there, where they'll be closer to the center of the ridge, and that's where any activity would be a little more scattered here.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much for taking the time with me today.
You're very welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo, of course, is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. I will be headed to the Red River Valley in the next 24 hours. Follow along at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.